Okay, we're on page 702, Perek Chofei, Pasik Lamites, 39. The last thing we were learning was about not taking interest, or Neshech or Mabris, this is called, both are the same thing. One is, as the Gemara says, to get you two sins instead of one. Today we're going to be learning about something that we learned a long time ago in Parshas Mishpatim. But here the Torah is going into more details than the Torah did in Parshas Mishpatim. Okay, Torah says like this, if your brother becomes poor with you, and he becomes sold to you. So the Torah says, you're not allowed to work with him slave labor. Now this is what's known as an Eved Ivri. Eved Ivri means a Jewish slave. There's only two possibilities for a Jew to become a slave to another Jew. One is, as we learned before in Parshas Mishpatim, a guy steals. He doesn't have money to pay back what he stole. So the courts would sell him as a slave for 6 years that he should pay back the money that he stole. Here the Torah is speaking about a different case. A person just became so poor, they have no money to eat, they have no money to live. That is only the second condition, that a person is allowed to sell himself as a slave. Now, the Torah over here is teaching us the following halacha. Even though basically it's called a slave, Eved Ivri, he's a Jewish slave, but the Torah warns us, Leisavid be'avedus Eved, you cannot make him as a slave that's degrading type of work. For instance, the Gemara says, and Rashi quotes from the Medrash, from the Gemara, you can't have him bring your bathhouse bag with you, or you can't have him put on your shoes. You know, these are degrading types of work that they would do with a real slave of old. But a Jewish slave, you're not allowed, you can only give him skilled labor, basically. Like you can have him work for you in the field. So basically, for all practical purposes, is a guy that you have a 6 year contract that he works for you.
If he like $1 is still $100, is still 6 years, isn't it?
Yeah. And the rest of the money he keeps. If a guy steals, let's say, $100,
yeah,
and as a slave he's worth $600,
yeah,
so the guy doesn't keep $600.
No, he's like $8 per hour.
No, it doesn't go like that.
He gives 500 back to the slave,
yeah. But the Torah says like this. He has to put him like skilled work, field labor, or, you know, basically normal type of work that's not degrading. That's what the Torah says. And in fact, we're soon going to learn another pasuk the Torah says, you can't even sell him like a slave. In a few psukim we'll learn, the Torah uses another word, means years ago they used to sell slaves on what was called slave blocks. There was an open market, slaves came, masters came, buyers came, sellers came, they would sell.
Auction
but open market. A Jewish slave is not allowed to be sold like that, because it's degrading. That the Torah is going to say in a few psukim. Right now the Torah is saying the pasuk, you cannot make him work hard work.
Somebody borrow money from somebody else.
And he can't pay it back, he does not become slave.
No, well, they cannot pay. They don't have to pay. They don't have the money.
They have to pay.
They don't have the money to pay back.
Now.
But yeah, after 7 years, what's going to happen?
They have to pay back, eventually.
Eventually, so after 7 years, it doesn't
go away? No. If he borrowed money, this is the only time you're sold as a slave is when you steal and you don't have. If somebody borrows money and he can't pay back, he's not sold as a slave. This case is speaking, guy has no money even to live, so then he sells himself as a Bezdin, doesn't sell him. The courts only sell a Jew when he stole and can't pay back. Here, this case is being the guy sells himself as a slave. Kesachir keteshav yeimach, it should be like a regular laborer and a regular resident. At Shnasa Yovel Yavid Imach, until the year of Yovel, he should work with you. What does it mean until the year of Yovel? Now, before we learned in Chumash, he only works for 6 years. What this pasuk is saying, teaching us, Rashi says that if Yovel comes in the middle of the 6 years, the Jubilee year, he also goes out free. In Parshas Mishpatim, the Torah says, after 6 years, the slave goes out free. And if he wants to stay, he stays and pierces his ears. And here the Torah is saying, until Yovel, which means that if this, during the 6 years, the Jubilee, the Yovel year comes, he goes out free. V'yatzim me'imach, he goes out, I'm going to learn a bunch of psukim, we're going to discuss the whole thing over here. V'yatzim me'imach, he leaves you. Hu uvan of ima, him and his children with you. So what does the pasuk say here? He leaves and his children leave. So right away, Rod, the Medrash, Rod, the Gemara, Rashi asks, how did the kids get in here? You know, how did the kids get in here? So Rashi explains, and the Gemara explains, it's speaking in a case, not in a case, when you buy a Jewish slave, you are halachically responsible to support his entire family. So this is what the it costs a lot of money.
Why?
But the guy obviously is willing to buy it. To buy him.
If he doesn't want to buy it, say, I don't want to buy
him.
Because
if nobody wants to buy him, nobody wants to buy him.
No.
In fact, the Gemara says, Hakein Kedushin, Hakeina Eved La'atzmei, Kona Odon La'atzmei. If you buy a slave, you buy a master. Why? The Gemara says, when you eat, you have to feed him before you feed yourself. You have one pillow, the Eved needs it, not you. I mean, basically, you have to take care of the servant, of the slave, better than you take care of yourself, the Gemara says. But the Gemara says, one of the obligations that a master has when he buys an Eved Ivri is to take care of the wife and kids. Even in Mishpatim it says, V'yatza ishtai imay, his wife goes out with him. So Rashi over there asks about the wife. Who brings the wife in? So Rashi says over there the same thing like here. Here the Torah says the children. Over there it says the wife, meaning you have an obligation to support the wife and the kids. Now, an Eved Ivri, like we learned a long time ago in Mishpatim, is a full-fledged Jew that you are just hiring to work for you for 6 years. It's like a contract for 6 years. He can go. He can redeem himself within the 6 years we learned, but he can't. If he can't redeem himself, the guy stays working contract for 6 years. He's obligated in every mitzvah in the Torah, except one. The master can give him a non-Jewish woman as a not a wife, but that he should reproduce more slaves for the master. Now that din only applies, the Torah says in Mishpatim, the Gemara learns out from the wording of the Pasuk, only if he's married. That means, if a Jewish slave is married, then... One time, relax. Relax.
Now, sure doesn't sound very right.
Why?
There is... God has a big complaint box. You can put all your complaints in there. We have one in the shul. It's a circular container in the back with a blue bag in it. For all the people that have complaints in the shul, we tell them, put them in the complaint box. Or the suggestion box. But God also has a bunch of those. I'll explain in a second. So the Torah says like this. If the guy has a wife from before, you're a Yiddish guy, Yiddish wife, then the master can give him a maidservant to reproduce more slaves, because then the kids are not Jewish, and they become slaves that belong to the master.
He married or that without married?
No, only if the Eved is married.
No, he married with the non-Jewish girl or not?
No. In Ma'adein Avit and Laisha, there's no actual marriage. They don't celebrate a wedding, a chuppah. They don't have all that. It's poshut for the Eved to work, so to speak, at night. That's how the Eved works at night. If the slave is not married, the Pasuk says basically, then the master cannot give him a shiksa. The logic between that is very simple. Hopefully, one second, if he's married, he's not going to want to stay with the shiksa, like the guy says, after Sodan, Yasishti, you know, I want to stay with the shiksa, because hopefully he'll want to go back to his wife.
If they're beautiful?
Doesn't matter, any type. One second. So, but if he is not married, then we're afraid he's going to fall in love with the shiksa, and therefore the Torah says no. Now, the Torah says, and again, this is where the Torah itself makes the exception to the rule. Okay? You have the same thing A Jew goes in Parshas Kiseitze, Eishes Yifas Torah, as it's called. A guy goes to war, falls in love with a shiksa, right, marries with him. But over there, she actually converts. Here, the shiksa does not convert. She stays a slave of the master, whatever. And now, the Torah does this because the Torah, so to speak, I can't say this is the reason. I don't know. But there's a possible thing over here like this. Like we just said, you're taking an Eved, right? It's costing you money. Not only are you buying the Eved, you have to support his wife and kids for 6 years. And you're not gaining anything out of them. They're not working for you. You're taking this man, and all of a sudden you have to support 10 kids with and those days maybe you had a few wives, right? So maybe you have to support a few wives and a bunch of kids. So the Torah says, I'll make it up to you. One second, you can take the shiksa, reproduce. So the owner, at least, is gaining out of this. He's going to be getting more slaves for free.
And he cannot refuse.
But what if the Eved cannot refuse.
But what if the shiksa doesn't want to participate in this?
So he finds one that wants. What?
Is the woman a slave woman? She's like Jewish
through
being a slave?
Not Jewish. A
shiksa. It's not an
It's not a Jewish wife.
It's not El-Kanani.
This is... No. No.
But isn't that degrading?
To whom?
For the slave. And his wife. And for the men.
And how fair is it to the wife that her husband is...
He's reproducing.
Factory.
Is that cheating?
Factory.
The Torah is encouraging cheating.
No, it's not. This is the only case the Torah allows it. And basically, I'm not going to say it's a chayik, but this is a case. Again, let's go back to fundamental Judaism. You know, a lot of people ask, what's wrong with marrying a shiksa? They're such wonderful people. What's wrong with marrying such a guy, a man, a shaygitz? Such wonderful people. What's wrong with... What's the answer? Because the Torah says no. There's no other answer. The Torah says no. That's it. Right? You can't say they're not good people. They might be wonderful people. Right? They'll tell you they're better than the Jewish girls. They demand less. They don't make you crazy. Right? Okay, but the bottom line is, you can't, because the Torah says no. But just think, 1 second. Are you allowed to eat on Yom Kippur? No. Is there an exception to the rule? Yeah. Okay, are you allowed to marry a shiksa? No. Is there an exception to the rule? Here the Torah says there's an exception to the rule. If a guy was Eved Ivri, the Rabbi, and that's it.
If the owner forgives
to free the Eved, he could.
He could?
Yeah.
What if the slave, something happens to him, he dies or something, he still has to support the family for...
No. Once the Eved is out, he's out. That's why it says here, the Yatameimach, when he goes out of you, who of Anavima, him and his children, Vishav, 1 second, Vishav al Mishpachte, and the servant goes back to his family, to the ancestral heritage of his parents. Now, what this means is as follows. The kids that he has with the shiksa, they stay. Now, meaning, if the slave had a job before he became a slave, the Jewish slave, he doesn't lose his previous rights because he became a slave. That means, which the Mefarshim explained like this, Rashi follows the opinion of Rab Meir, who says that let's say the slave was an official position in a city. You know, a prominent position. And for whatever reason, his luck went bad on him, he had to sell himself as a slave. He goes out free, he goes back to his original position. Rab Yehuda argues... Maybe you'd argue and says, that's not what the Torah means over here. He goes back to his land, but he doesn't go back to the position of before. That's the way Rambam learns. Rashi learns, like another opinion in the Gemara Meir, that it means he goes back to the position, not only to the land. And as he goes back to his farm, whatever he had, he goes back to. And the Torah says, why is this? So the Torah says like this. Ki avadai heim asher etzei si eisa me'aretz Mitzrayim. Hashem says, because a Jew is my slave. They're my slaves that I took them out of Egypt. Like when Hashem freed the Jews from Egypt, Hashem made a deal with the Jews, I'm freeing you from power slavery, but now you are my slaves. And therefore, the Torah says, lo yimachru mimkoris eved, you cannot sell him the way you normally sell a slave. Okay? You have to sell him, like we said, discreetly, privately, not in an open slave market. You need to treat the slave with proper dignity and proper respect, because Hashem says they're really my slaves. And I'm just allowing the new owner to use them for me, so to speak. But really, it's Hashem's slaves. What?
Didn't we learn about the laws of slavery?
In Mishpatim.
Right. Torah is repeating
it. No, here the Torah is adding much more laws that didn't say there. And that we find, the Gemara says, the Torah will sometimes repeat a law, even for one din that wasn't learned in the previous one. And here there's a bunch of dinim that the Torah is teaching us. You cannot make him work hard work. Okay, you can't subjugate him. And the pasuk, fear God. What is, again, what does it mean, fear God? Like we learned before in Chumash, a guy will say, I didn't mean to, I didn't want. The Torah says, I'm telling you, I know what you meant. So don't work him hard and say you didn't, or you didn't mean to, and whatever. Yereisim and the Torah says, when it comes to these things, the Torah says, I'm warning you, be careful. But also, as he quotes from the Rambam in various things, you can't order him to perform difficult tasks that has no useful purpose. And here's another interesting thing. You're not allowed to have the Eved do things for you that you don't need. Because the Torah, because the question over here, the Torah already said, "Leisavid ba'aved esavid." Right? We just learned, don't make him work like a slave. So what does the Torah say again? "Leisir debay befarach," do not subjugate him through hard labor. So the Gemara says what that means is you cannot make him do work that you don't need. Like tell him, go boil water when you don't need the water, or whatever. That you're not allowed to have him do, just to keep him busy. That's called work without a purpose, which is torturous. And that you're not allowed to do either.
It's the same term that was used when the Jews were slaves in Egypt.
Yeah, befarach, right. Because it said, what did power make him do? Build buildings, take them apart, or they fell apart, and make him do it again. That's torturous when somebody works, and then the whole thing falls apart. That's part of farach. And Torah says, you know how to do that to a Jewish slave. Now, the avdecha, I'm going to learn a few psukim and then we're going to discuss this whole thing in a spiritual sense. The avdecha v'amoscha asher yilucha. But a slave or a maidservant that you may own, meisa goyim asher sviveseichem, from the goyim that are around you, mehem tiknu eved v'am. From them you could buy a slave and a maidservant. Okay? These psukim now deal with the din of a Jew buying a goyish slave. A non-Jewish slave. See, the difference is like this, amongst many differences. When you buy a Jewish slave, you don't own him. Like, his kids from his marriage to the Jew don't belong to you, whatever. You don't own the guy. He works for you for 6 years, he goes out free. A goyish slave, his body belongs to you. Which is, by the way, I mean, the psukim are not talking about it here, but in other places, the Torah says another interesting din. If a kohen buys a Jewish slave, that Jewish slave cannot eat truma. If the Jewish slave is not a kohen, but he's bought by a kohen who eats truma, right? The Jewish slave cannot eat truma. A goyish slave that a kohen buys could eat truma. Truma is what the gifts you give to a kohen, like Ma said, the tithes. Okay, so some of them, like truma is holy. A Yisrael is not allowed to eat truma, right? A person's not a kohen, cannot eat truma. So if a kohen buys a Jewish slave, that slave cannot eat truma. Why? Because he's not the property of the kohen. He's just a worker of the kohen. A worker is not a kohen. But if a kohen buys a goyish slave, because it becomes the property of the owner, he becomes the property of the kohen, that slave who's a goy can eat truma. Now, he's not really a goy. When you buy a goyish slave, okay, the Gemara says, and the Rambam brings down, this is what you do. You work with him for a year to convert. What does it mean? When you buy a goyish slave, you give him a bris. He goes to the mikveh. At that time, he becomes obligated in all the mitzvahs that women have to keep. Meaning all the negative commandments and any positive mitzvah not connected to time. He basically has a din like a Jewish woman. All the mitzvahs a woman has to keep, this eved has to keep. If, and we'll soon learn when the case is, what happens if the eved becomes free? He's a full-fledged Jew.
What?
Why?
What did you just say?
If you free him, this guy is your slave, he becomes a full-fledged Jew.
What if he doesn't want to be?
Oh, so the Rambam says, what happens if he doesn't want to? You work with him for a year, and if after a year he refuses, you got to let him go.
No. You said you worked with him for a year.
That's the year.
Okay, so, but I thought that you're not supposed to, that's almost like proselytizing.
Yeah, but you bought him, so you have to make him a Jew.
So if doesn't want to...
If somebody has a kid, is that proselytizing? No, the kid's yours, it's Jewish.
If from the beginning, it doesn't want to be Jewish.
The Eved?
Yeah.
So again, you work with him for a year, if after a year he refuses, let him go.
Are you obligated?
Right. Yeah. No. You have to do it.
Any slave that's not a slave that you buy,
right.
That
right.
You're obligated to try and basically
right.
Convert them.
Right. But then, again, it is like a partial conversion. You buy him, you convert him the day, you buy him. Even if you buy... No, the Torah says...
But that's both male and
one second. Yeah. Shivcha Kanani Sosa. But you don't give her a bris, obviously.
But now...
No, but the din is...
One second.
If you
cohabitate with him in order to produce.
No, there could be any.
You're supposed to treat her like she's Jewish?
No. Over there, speaking about. You give her mamash shiksa. That didn't convert at all.
Yeah.
You know what? One second. Shivcha Kananis, I don't remember what the din is by Shivcha Kananis. By the woman. I don't remember. Okay? By an Avid Kanani, by an Avid Kamel. Give him a bris, convert. And it's interesting. The Torah says in Parshas Vayera, Chayisara, when Hashem gives the mitzvah bris, the end of Parshas Chayisara, over there the Torah says, if you buy a slave, the day you buy him, you give him a bris. That means, if you buy a newborn baby as a slave, he's 2 days old, you give him a bris at 2 days old.
That's
the Pasuk in Chumash.
Not wait for 8 days?
They don't wait for 8 days. At the end of Chayisar, hello, listen. Yeah.
Okay. So interesting.
Yeah. All the way back, I'm sorry, why did I say the Chayisar? Lechucha. It says like this. Ben Shmeinus Yomim Yimo Kol Zochel Adirei Seichem. Okay? One second. Here the Torah says, Shukon Mishneilad. But the Gemara says that the Eved, the day you buy him is the day you give him a bris, not on the eighth day.
Not
the
eighth day, huh?
No.
If you give the wife, in the children, is your slave or is a Jew or what? What is this Jewish?
If what?
If they give wife, produce some. You know, what's the children?
The non-Jew. It's your slaves. They're yours for permanency.
This half Jew right now.
No, no. I've said the shivch. I don't know the din about. Maybe she stays a shivch, a guy. What?
Okay, so leaving off, we don't know quite at the moment what you would do with the shiksa, right?
Right.
But so you're going to get her so that she will produce children with your...
No, they used to buy me.
Yeah. So she's going to produce children from this, not from the Jewish slave, right? Yeah. Now he has, let's say, three male children from that cohabitation. What is the obligation for those three male children? You also give them a bris and get, mm-hmm. after a year they become converted?
Not after. They become right away. Goyish slaves. Give them a bris.
They become goyish slaves. But you're saying that when you buy a male goyish slave, you have a year to try and convert them. So
but here their kids are right away. They have no choice in the matter.
They're not Jewish.
The mother's still a shivcha kanainis.
Right. So do you also have a year with
those? No.
Names?
No. What?
Why?
I said not. I said by shivcha it's not like that.
So is that because you didn't buy them?
You didn't buy them, and they're not mature enough to make decisions. So it's your decision.
If has a children.
Then the kids are goyim and they're your slaves.
They cannot convert it, the children? Or
no.
Could the kohen become a slave?
We learned before, what did we learn? For a Jewish slave, yeah.
So the kids would be a kohen?
No, you wouldn't, since the mother's not Jewish. Okay. Let's finish up this thing over here. So it says like this. V'gam ne'ati shavim ha'gorim imachim, also from the children of the residents, meaning when goyim that accepted the seven mitzvahs lived in Eretz Yisrael, mehem tiknu, from them you could buy goyish slaves, mimishpachtem asher imachim, the families that are with you, asher alidu ba'artich, and they will give birth in your land, and you buy them as slaves, v'hoyu lachem la'chuzo, they become permanent inheritance to you. And not only that, v'snachaltem esam lebneichem achareichem l'reshes achuzo. When the master dies, by goyish slaves, if the master dies, his children inherit the slaves. They're like mamish's property. Just like they inherit the land, they inherit the slaves. La'elam b'hem ta'vedu, they shall work with you forever. But, u'ba'acheichem b'nei Yisrael ish ba'achiv, when it comes to the Jewish people, lo'yisir d'bei b'farach, don't subjugate him for this hard work. So what's the Torah saying? By a goyish slave, the Torah is saying the halacha is like this. You buy them, they belong to you, they're yours forever, their children are yours forever, your children inherit, okay? And the Torah says, la'elam b'hem ta'vaidu. They have to work forever.
Why forever?
The Torah says,
but then only if the male slave doesn't want to convert.
Not a question of conversion. It's a forced conversion, basically, unless the guy puts up a fight that he doesn't want. He's converted, but not he's a full-fledged Jew. He's not a full-fledged Jew until he actually becomes freed. As long as he's a slave, he cannot marry a Jewish woman. He's obligated in mitzvahs that women have to keep, and that's it. But he's not a converted Jew yet. When he becomes free, that means if the master frees him, he becomes a full-fledged Jew. Or there are certain times, the Torah says, an Eved goes out free. If you knock out his eye by mistake, or his tooth by mistake, or one of the 24 primary limbs of the body, the Gemara says, then the Eved goes out free, and he becomes a full-fledged Jew. But the Torah uses the pasuk here, le'elam b'hem ta'avedu, they should work with you forever. And the Gemara says, the Gemara in Gittin says, that this pasuk teaches us it's a positive mitzvah that they should work forever not to free them. And therefore the Gemara says the expression, kolam shachrer avdei, whoever frees his goyish slave, transgresses this mitzvah in the Torah that says, la'elam b'hem ta'avedu, they should work with you forever.
6 years is now, after 6 years they don't?
No, the goyish slave, forever. The goyish is a slave forever. Only a Jewish slave is 6 years. This guy works for you for your lifetime, your kid's lifetime, until he dies. And any children that he produces also belong to you. So the Gemara says, if you free your goyish a slave, you transgress a positive mitzvah. So there's a very interesting story in the Gemara that Tosfos brings down. The Gemara tells a story like this. Rabbi Lazar was once coming with his Eved. This is good for the men to hear. Rabbi Lazar was once came into a shul with his Eved Kanani. Because in those days it was very common to have Avadim. And there were 9 people to the minyan. So Rabbi Lazar wanted to daven with a minyan. He freed his slave.
For 1 minute.
No, once you free him, he's freed. Fits it. He freed a slave to be able to have a 10th guy to the minyan. Because once you free him, he becomes a full-fledged Jew. And he was able to daven with the minyan. So the Gemara asks, the Mefarshim asks, Tosfos asks, but it says it's a positive commandment that he shouldn't free them, he should work for you forever. So the Gemara answers, davening with the minyan is so important, and they say that it's not really a positive mitzvah. The Torah is telling you a proper thing to do, but it's not a real positive mitzvah. But the bottom line is, the Gemara says, davening with a minyan is so important, you are allowed to free your slave, that he should be able to make a minyan, even though the Torah says you shouldn't free them. Okay, that shows how important davening with a minyan is, that you're even allowed to free your slave, like Rabbi Lazar did, to be able to daven with a minyan.
Rabbi Lazar was during the time of Babel, right? So these laws were effective then. Do we know when they stopped? Where we stopped?
Eved Kanani or Eved Ivri?
The entire, law.
Midway through the, in the end of the second Beis Hamikdash. Now, so the Torah says like this. There's a Jewish slave and there's a Goyish slave. There's Eved Ivri that we said, he works for you for 6 years. You cannot buy him and sell him in the open market. You can't make him work hard. Basically a worker, and he's yours. Then there's what's called Eved Kanani. Eved Kanani is when you buy a Goyish slave. The Goyish slave is yours forever. You're not supposed to free him, and that's it. There's a third level that we learned about in Parshas Mishpatim that the Torah does not discuss now, because over here in this Parsha, the Torah is discussing when people go broke. There's a third level called Amma Ilvriya. When you buy a Jewish girl as a maidservant, she can only be sold under Bas Mitzvah. She can only work for 6 years, or when she reaches puberty, when she becomes a gedola, a mature adult. And that's it. But that's also a category of Amma Ilvriya, right? The Jewish maidservant, so you have a male Jew, female Jew, and then you have, two types of goyish slaves also. So it says in Chassidus, it's a very interesting concept. We know that every aspect of Torah is a lesson in life. It's not only, every halacha in Torah, even if it's irrelevant today, even though it doesn't apply today, but it applies in a spiritual sense. So Chassidus explains like this. There's 3 categories, because a Jew, like you said, Avodeihem, a Jew is supposed to serve Hashem as an Eved. Im Kebonim, Im Kavodim, Avinu, Malkeinu. We serve Hashem as an Eved. There are 3 levels and 3 ways of serving Hashem. From lower to higher, Eved Kanani, Eved Ivri, and Amma Ivriya. The highest level in Ruchnius, in the spiritual realm, is a Jewish maidservant. What does this mean? The Gemara says like this. The Gemara says about a goyish slave, avda behefkeira nichale. An Eved like to be free for all. He wouldn't like to be controlled. He likes to be free to do whatever they want. That's the personality of an Eved. So it says, Eved Kanani, what every Jew has within him, refers to the Yetzer Hara of the Jew. It's a, like the Gemara calls it, Hagoy Asher Bekir Bacha, the Goy, the non-Jew within us, that's the Yetzer Hara, the animal soul of the person. That soul really would love not to serve God. But the person works with himself, And he gets that even the Yetzer Hara does mitzvahs. Right? It's called Kabbalah's oil. Accepts the yoke of Hashem, he's really not interested. A typical Jew, right? His Yetzer Hara would rather eat what it wants, do what it wants, to go where it wants, not wake up early and whatever. Well, that's called Eved Kanani. Eved Kanani refers to working with the Yetzer Hara in a way that he really doesn't want to do mitzvahs, but he's forced to do it. Kabbalah Seol, acceptance of the yoke. That is in Avedas Hashem, the level that's called Eved Kanani. It's a Kanani Goy, the Yetzer Hara, and he does it with Kabbalah Seol. Then there's a second level called Eved Ivri. What does Eved Ivri mean? He explains to the Yetzer Hara in a way that even the Yetzer Hara understands that really this is the way we should be doing it. And the Yetzer Hara also understands, you know, we need to do Torah mitzvahs. It's beneficial for us to do Torah mitzvahs. But he doesn't make the Yetzer Hara, he makes the Yetzer Hara agree to do it, but he really doesn't make the Yetzer Hara really want to do it. He doesn't transform the Yetzer Hara that the Yetzer Hara also only wants to be good. In other words, there's two ways of dealing with the Yetzer Hara. You can have an Eved that forces the Yetzer Hara to do what it wants. That's one Eved Kanani. Eved, even if you explain to the Yetzer Hara in a way that it understands also a little bit that this is the right thing to do. But, as the Gemara uses the expression about a husband, about an Eved, whatever, the Eved works in the field. Okay? What does he bring into the house? The raw materials. Raw wheat, raw barley, raw corn. Right? It's not edible yet. Who makes it into edible food? Who transforms the non-edible into the edible? That's the job of the wife. Right? Like the Gemara says, the husband brings home wheat, but it's not edible, and the wife makes it into edible food. In a spiritual sense, Ama Ivriya is the one that takes the Yetzer Hara and makes it into a Yetzer Teif. That transforms the Yetzer Hara, and that's why it's called Ama Ivriya, the female aspect, which is, the Gemara says, she makes the food into something edible, meaning not only is it a level of Yiddishkeit that the Yetzer Hara agrees to do it, you're not forcing him to do it, he agrees to do it, but that's not really what he really wants. The level of Ami Yevriya by a Jew refers to a level of Kedusha that the person works with himself to such an extent, like the Gemara says, you love God with your two souls. B'chol levavcha, b'shnei yitzerecha, you love Hashem with your animal soul and with your godly soul. So these three levels of the Eved actually reflect, in a practical level of Avedas Hashem, the three levels of how a Jew serves Hashem. Either by forcing the Yetzer Hara Kabbalah Seol, or with Seichel, explaining it, which is Ami Ivri, Eved Ivri, and Ami Ivriya is the highest level that transforms the Yetzer Hara into Yetzer Teif. So these things are actually relevant, even in practice, even though we don't have the dinim of slavery today, but the concept of slaves we have with the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Teif.
Is there explanation for the 6-year term, Rabbi?
The 6-year refers to the 6,000 years. Right? We learned already in the past, the Shemitah is 6 years and 7th year of Shabbos, right? The 7th day of the week is Shabbos. The 7th month is Tishrei. The 7th year is Shemitah. 7th cycle of 7 is Yovel. The whole world is created 6,000 years. The 7,000th year era is Bashvis Yetzei Lachov Shechinam. He goes out free. So, by an Eved Knani, it says La'elam Bam Tavedu until the concept of Yovel, which is a much higher spiritual level than Shemitah, because Yovel is the ultimate completeness of the 50 levels of understanding God, Chamishim Shari Bina. So Yovel, we deal with the Yetzer Hara and that level that goes all the way to the Yovel years, to the highest Chamishim Shari Bina. The Eved Ivri and the Ami Ivriya, that refers to 6 years, referring to the 6,000 years of work, and the seventh year they got free because it's the Yom Tov, the concept of Shemitah, or Mashiach, or whatever. So it does correspond with the 6 years and the seventh year and that aspect of it. But there's an advantage, though, like we learned, of Kabbalah's oil. Acceptance of the yoke causes a much greater level of relationship with God than when you serve God with Seichel. Mm-hmm. Even though somebody will say, well, when you understand it, it's much higher, it's a greater level. But the truth is, we see this even in the Beis Hamikdash. They used to pour wine on the Mizbeach. By all Karbanos said Nisach HaYayin. V'nisker Reviya Sehin. Right? There was always an amount of wine. Every carbon had wine poured with it. In English, they call it the libations. Simchas Beis HaShe'eva and Sukkis. They didn't pour wine on the Mizbeach. They poured water on the Mizbeach. Right? And the Gemara says, "Misha leira simchas beis hasha'eva leira simcha miyomav." If you didn't see the joy in the Beis Hamikdash by simchas beis hasha'eva, you never saw simcha in your days, right? So the question is, simchas beis hasha'eva was water on the mizbeach. The regular during the year is wine. Wine is much better than water. Why is the simcha only when you pour water on the mizbeach? When you pour wine on the mizbeach, it should be, as the pasuk says, Yayin Yisamach Levavanish. Wine makes you happy. So that should be the real simcha. So the answer is, because wine, which tastes good, represents understanding. Yayin represents bina, the level of understanding. Mayim, no taste, nothing. And as we learned tonight, you don't make a bracha on water unless if you're enjoying and benefiting from it. So water represents Kabbalah's oil. There's no understanding, there's no wine, there's no night deliciousness, there's no taste to it, there's nothing. It's just
simple faith.
Simple faith. Kabbalah's oil. You do it because Hashem said so. True simcha can only be when you serve Hashem with Kabbalah's oil, not with seichel. Why? Because when you serve Hashem with your brain, as smart as you are, it's still limited. The biggest genius in the world is still limited. Seichel is mugbal. Seichel is limited. So when you're serving Hashem with Seichel, there's two problems with it. Number one, it's limited. Secondly, you never leave yourself. It's your understanding. It's all you. How much you understand. Right? When you have Kabbalah's oil, meaning you don't understand it, you just do it because Hashem said so, because Hashem said so, that level of doing is leaving you. Because you don't even know why you're doing it. There's no you involved. You're doing it because Hashem said so. It's not that you understand it, you feel it, you recognize the greatness. You're doing it because Hashem said so. That level can reach, because the person leaves themselves, that's how they reach the infinite God. So true simcha, that the Gemara says, simcha peretz geder, simcha breaks barriers. When a person's happy, they do things that they normally wouldn't do. Simcha breaks barriers, but that can only be with Kabbalah's oil mayim, not seichel. Because anytime you understand, it's still limited in how much you understand. When you do things because you don't understand, you do it because Hashem said to do it, then you're actually leaving your personal self, and then you're reaching the infinite God. And that's a much greater level.
If you know something is better, you can digest it. So it's something he doesn't know that. It's true or not.
Yeah, but then it's you doing it, not because God said so, but because you understand it.
So you enjoy it when you understand it.
You need, the ultimate way is both things together. You do it like Nasa v'Nishma.
Yeah.
Nasa is Kabbalah's oil. Nishma is understanding. You need both together. But the Yesod, the foundation, has to be, we do it because Hashem said so. Now let me try to understand why Hashem wants me to do it, because then I'll have an excitement about it, I'll have a feeling to it. But that's not why we do it. We don't do it because we understand it. Because then it becomes limited. Based on how much you understand, that's how much you're going to do.
Something you should understand, something you don't understand.
Right. So, but even the things we understand, we don't do it because we understand, we do it because Hashem said so.
But Rabbi, also, you know, there's a level that, let's say, you do things or you pray from the fear that I gotta do this, this is what I need to do, and so on. And then there's the level that you do it because you want to get closer to Hashem. So,
you start with the first level, fear.
Right.
Then you go to love. Right?
Right.
The ultimate level,
after love.
Ultimate, is to do it because Hashem said so. That means, even after I understand it, even after I understand it, the ultimate level is, I still do it because Hashem does it. Shlomo HaMelech has a pasuk, Pesi Yamin L'chol Davar. A fool believes everything. It's a famous Shlomo HaMelech writes, Pesi Yamin L'chol Davar. A fool believes everything. So the Medrash says, who is he referring to? The Medrash says, Pesi Yamin L'chol Davar, Zemeshe Rabbeinu. Who is the fool that believes everything? The Medrash says, it's Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was Chochmah Vatzilus. Moshe Rabbeinu was the epitome of Chochmah, epitome of wisdom, epitome of knowledge. Yet, Shlomo HaMelech is talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, he was a fool that believed everything. What does it mean? So the explanation is very simple. Moshe Rabbeinu's greatness was that even after he understood it all, he knew all the reasons and all the meanings and the Kabbalah and everything of it. Why did he do it? Because Hashem told him to do it. Out of belief, not out of understanding. So you can have two levels of belief. You can have belief because you don't understand it. Right? I don't understand it, so I guess I have to believe in it. Right? That belief is lower than seichel. It's lower than intellect. Then through that though, a person eventually reaches a level of faith which is higher than intellect. Which means that after all is said and done and everything is understood, why does he do it? Because Hashem said so. There's an expression, Chassidus brings it down a lot, but it's an expression from earlier Sfarim, Tachlis Hayidiyah, Shalol Nadeacha. The ultimate knowledge is that we don't understand. It doesn't say it's not knowledge. The ultimate knowledge is to realize you don't understand. So there's a knowledge, there's a belief in faith lower than seichel, lower than understanding. Like a kid, you tell them they don't understand anything, you don't know it because they do it. Right? Then the ultimate goal is to come to understand it. Then the ultimate goal is to understand it and to do it not because we understand it. We learned many times in the world, everything is classified into four categories. Domeim, Tzemeach, Chai, Medaber. Inanimate, plant, animal, and human. So everything in the world is either inanimate, plant, animal, and human. So it says, the purpose of everything is to go higher. Which means, a very simple example, let's say water is domain, water is inanimate. When you water a plant, so the plant grows because of the water. So now the water is part of the plant. So water became elevated to plant. When a plant is eaten by an animal, becomes the blood and flesh of the animal, so the plant becomes elevated to animal. Peter, excuse me, when a person eats an animal, which according to the Torah, you're supposed to eat animals, so contrary to the animal lovers that say, oh, you're hurting the animals, on the contrary, you're doing the animal a favor. Because now the animal becomes blood and flesh of the person, right? So the animal becomes elevated to human. Think about it, it goes up. See, these people think animals are better than humans, so there's a problem. But normally, animal is eaten by a human, that's why the Torah allows meat. Right? Now, a person is the epitome of creation, the epitome of intellect. Right? Where do they go? Everything moves up. Inanimate moves up to plant. Plant man moves up to animal. Animal moves up to human. Where do humans go? So no. So the answer is, humans symbolize with intellect. Right? What's the difference between a person and an animal? Atochen in Lod and Das. The ultimate elevation of a person is when he puts his seichel to the side and serves God out of belief. That make you lose your mind. Some people lose it earlier than others. But what is the point? Then the person, i.e. intellect, becomes elevated to God. That is only Kabbalah Sil. But that belief is not lower than intellect. That belief is higher than intellect. Because they do understand, and then they put the understanding off at the side to serve God out of seichel.
You have to actually experience and go through that process.
You go through the process, yeah. Okay.